Mrs. Conant, most unexpectedly to herself, was immediately controlled by an Indian influence whose love for White Cloud was not of that tender sort supposed to rule in the happy hunting ground, and a fierce struggle ensued, each hostile spirit endeavoring to destroy its enemy. The warfare was, however, of short duration, as the medium of White Cloud, being much reduced by sickness, was no match for his brisk opponent, and when Mr. and Mrs. Pope rushed into the room, attracted by the uproar, they found the lamps broken, the table overturned, and Mrs. Conant, unconsciously entranced, belaboring the unfortunate Upham with a chair. In all probability he would have been killed, as White Cloud still held control of him with true Indian pluck, and would not yield, had not the colonel and his wife interposed as a rescue. After considerable difficulty they finally succeeded in separating the combatants, and then set about convincing the belligerent chiefs that they were dead, that if either killed anybody now it would be one of the mediums who would die, not the enemy they desired to destroy. The Urius combat then closed, leaving the visitor in a somewhat battered state, while Mrs. Conant was found to have sustained no injury. This manifestation, rather startling, it must be confessed, was but a representative of one of the characteristic phases of undeveloped spirit communion at that early day. 7. At the conclusion of one of her sittings at Mrs. Pope's, a gentleman paid Mrs. Conant her fee with some of the old Spanish silver pieces once quite in vogue, although now out of the currency, in New England. The coins bore such an ancient date that the attention of the medium was immediately called to them, and she placed them upon the mantel with an idea of keeping them as curiosities, but while she turned from the shelf to put some coal upon the grate, they disappeared. She looked incredulously at the place where she had just deposited them, but it was a certainty they were gone, and she did not hear of their whereabouts for several days, when she recoiled her lost property under the following singular circumstances. One of the children of Mrs. Oliver Stearns, who resided at No. 6 Cambridge Street, at the west end of Boston, came to her and said, "Mother wants to know if you have lost anything." "Yes," replied Mrs. C., "I have lost some silver pieces, and quite mysteriously, too," and she proceeded to describe them to the best of her remembrance. The boy at once took them from his pocket, and related the manner of their being found. An attendant spirit who used to manifest in the presence of one had brought the Pisterians to the house of Mrs. Stearns, as an exhibition of his powers, and on leaving them remarked that he had stolen them from Miss Conant, when her back was turned, and had transported them through the air across the city, Mrs. C.'s residence being at the north end, for the benefit of his child medium. The mother decided to wait a day or two, to discover whether he would take them away again, or if Mrs. C. would send for them, but finding nothing further was likely to occur, returned them to the rightful owner by the hand of her son. The same spirit, some time afterward, told Mrs. Conant that he tried the experiment in order to see what she would do about it. One evening, as Mrs. C. was preparing herself to go out with her husband for a visit, and had stepped into an adjoining room for a moment, she was somewhat annoyed on her return to find that the various paraphernalia indispensable to the female toilet, brushes, combs, hairpins, etc., which were but just now handily arranged for her use upon the dressing table, had disappeared. They could not be found, and she was obliged to apply to Mrs. Pope for aid in the emergency. She then went out for the evening, as previously decided upon, and, on reaching her room and preparing to retire, discovered all the missing articles very carefully wrapped up and hidden in the middle of her bed. So quietly had they been placed there that not a wrinkle or sign of disturbance in the clothing had been left to expose their presence, a thing which would have been exceedingly difficult of accomplishment, had the hiding been performed by some mischievous human being, owing to the short time she was absent from the room in the first instance, and it being improbable that anyone could have gained access to her room during her visit, as the door was locked and the key in her possession during the entire evening. 8. Time in its course brings to us great and unexpected changes, which result in the total rearranging of life's plans, or the turning of the current of existence into new and undreamed of channels. The great world of spirits had earnestly considered the question of establishing a printed organ for the enunciation of its ideas on Earth, which should be ruled by Xatoto, and the individuals who were to become the pioneers, and subsequently to carry into successful operation the wishes of the invisibles, were being gradually, though insensibly drawn toward each other, as atoms upon the surface of the water, and were soon in a most unexpected manner to become aggregated into working order. Luther Colby, who had for years been connected as a practical printer with the Boston Post a morning paper, at that time, and also at the present, a leading daily in the city, had become satisfied that his long night employment was injurious to his physical health, and was preparing to withdraw from it, having, however, no definite plan for the future. He became an investigator of the new philosophy, and, in Noy, 1855, met and became acquainted with Mrs. Conant at a circle held at the residence of Mrs. Stearns, before alluded to, on Cambridge Street. He at once became interested in her as a remarkable medium for the manifestation of spirit power, and recommended her to the attention of William Berry, afterward his partner. In a few days, Mr. Berry came to her, wishing her presence at North Cambridge, Mass., to examine a sick girl there residing. She made the journey, and so pleased were the relatives with the statements made by Dr. Fisher, that they greatly desired that he would treat the case. To this he consented, but told them, in advance, that it was impossible for the young lady to entirely recover, that she would probably live a long while, but would never be restored to sound health. The lady, in verification of this prediction, continues to this day a hopeless invalid. 9. Mr. Berry had been in the habit of holding seances each Wednesday evening at his residence in North Cambridge, having for a medium his brother-in-law, James Ross. But that personage desiring, on account of business relations, to visit the island of Cuba for a considerable period, Mr. B. was obliged to look around him for someone to fill the vacancy. Instinctively he was led to select the medical medium, whose skillful operations, while controlled, were the subject of so much comment, and, accordingly, some time after his first visit, made his appearance at the rooms of Mrs. Conant, accompanied by Mr. Colby, for the purpose of engaging her as the regular medium for his investigating circles, to which proposition she agreed. Between 20 and 30 persons generally attended the seances of Mr. Berry at this time, being invited to assist him in tracking to some definite conclusion the mystery which had made its appearance in society. The most startling and wonderful manifestations of spirit power, both in matters physical and mental, were obtained at these weekly meetings, of which a few specimens alone must suffice. At one of these seances the party desired to know if the spirits could not give them some manifestations in the dark, these meetings being held almost uniformly in the light, and were responded to affirmatively. The full moon shone brightly into the parlor where the assembly was convened, through two long windows, and when the gas was extinguished it seemed quite light therein. Some of the gentlemen therefore suggested putting up blankets as curtains to increase the obscurity. The spirits, however, declared that in that direction they would darken the room to suit themselves. Before long the apartment began to grow dark, gradually at first, as if a cloud obscured the moon, but finally becoming almost that impenetrable blackness of which it is said it can be felt. Electric lights of large dimensions then appeared in the room, and sounds, akin to the discharge of firearms, startled the company. A spirit present, who passed from his bodily form at the Battle of Monterrey, in Mexico, then announced his intention of giving a representation of that conflict, and distant cannonading, slowly growing more distinct, musketry and many of the dissonant accompaniments of nationalized butchery by which man in a professedly Christian era still murders his brother, were faithfully copied, to the astonishment of all, the phenomenon lasting from 15 to 20 minutes. During all this exciting sound panorama Mrs. Conant was entirely conscious, and describes it, as do all those who were in attendance on that occasion, as having even at the present day almost the effect of a terrible reality, rather than something given as an evening entertainment. Soon after the apostrophe battle was ended, Mrs. Conant was entranced, and, when she regained control of her faculties, found herself raised to the top of the table, the chair in which she was sitting, together with herself having been placed there by invisible agency previous to the return of the light, and, in accordance with the rapid transition sometimes witnessed in physical manifestations, from the sublime to the grotesque, smoking a pipe which the influence just controlling had demanded of the laughing company. Another phase of astonishing power at these circles was shown in the making of predictions concerning future events in the lives of those present, and also in the history of the nation. The late Civil War was unerringly foretold, and its length as to time definitely given, also the manner of its termination. These circles were held at Mr. Berry's residence by Mrs. Conant for several months, after which they were discontinued, and those for the Banner of Light commenced at the National House, Boston. Part 4 and further, titled SHE is employed by the Banner of Light as business and circle medium. This will be outlaid later. Part 4. We see but half the causes of our deeds, seeking them wholly in the outer world, unconscious of the spirit world which, though unseen, is felt, and sows in us the germs of pure and worldwide purposes. James Russell Lowell. Up now ensued a remarkable fulfillment of one of her prophecies which at the time of its enunciation was hardly believed to be practicable. As heretofore mentioned, Mr. Berry, after having consulted her with regard to the sick girl in North Cambridge, had visited her again, in company with Mr. Colby, to ascertain whether her medical control was willing she should accept the position of regular medium at his Wednesday evening seances. On that occasion, which was in the winter of 1855, Dr. Fisher told Mr. Berry that he was soon to change his business, that before long he would commence the publication of a paper in the interests of Spirit Communion, gave its name as the Banner of Light, told him who would be associated with him in business, when he would issue his prospectus, it, etc., and all these predictions in time proved true. Mr. Berry went away from the presence of the doctor deeply, 79, 80, a biography of, impressed with what had been imparted to him. Certain vague ideas which had been revolving in his mind for some time, here appeared to take shape, and before long developed into a determination to carry out the project so remarkably traced for him. The first number of the Banner of Ink bore date of April 11, 1857, and was issued by a firm bearing the style of Luther Colby & Co., at number 17 Washington Street, Boston. At the time of its first appearance in the literary world, as is the case with every new venture in the field of periodical literature, especially when the matter to be treated is an advanced thought, the publishers of the Banner of Light found the pecuniary hill hard to ascend, and were often much disconcerted at the want of means to carry on satisfactorily the project undertaken, but on such occasions application was immediately made for spirit direction through Mrs. Conant, which never failed to be of the most practical sort when given, and was implicitly followed by them. They were thereby led in safety through the most threatening dangers. The history of the Banner of Light, as a bold, honest and unselfish exemplar of the truth of spirit return and communion, is before the world, and can speak always for itself. The object of the present volume is to trace the lifeline of Mrs. Conant as it winds, in accordance with circumstances, across the pathway of the journal's existence. While Mr. Berry, as business manager, remained quiescent and obedient, like Paul of old, to the heavenly vision, all went well, but finally questions of policy arose in which he entertained a different belief from his spiritual advisers through Mrs. Conant, M.K.S. J. H. Conant. $1, and the breach rapidly widened till he almost bade them defiance, and declared his intention of publishing the paper to suit himself. With a hope of influencing his powerfully materialistic mind, his own guardian band of spirits sent a fearless, determined disembodied intelligence, who gave his name as William Jeffries, alias Captain, Pirate, Gibbs, to reason with him upon the plane of thought which was the most natural to both, Mr. Berry being, like the sailor, of a bold and dashing temperament which allowed no opposition to daunt him in the carrying out of his projects. But the arguments, and, afterward, threats of Captain Gibbs, could not influence the positive mind he had to combat, and he finally told Mr. Berry that under the circumstances nothing more could be done with him, but that in less than 2 years he would shake hands with him on the spirit side of life. The Civil War in time broke out, and Mr. Berry, after some preliminary movements, embarked on its sanguinary flood, became a first lieutenant in the Salem Sharpshooter Corps, and fell bravely fighting at the head of his company at the Battle of Antietam, M.D., September 17, 1862. 2. As this powerful invisible intelligence, Captain Gibbs, has been of much service and assistance to Mrs. Conant, a few examples of his foresight and skill will not be out of place in this connection, though the instances cited occurred later in her experience. He was, at his first coming, very violent in his manifestations, and decidedly dangerous as to his intentions, having on one or two occasions seemingly, 82 a biography of, attempted the life of the medium. He desired to have supreme control of her himself, and was thrown into ungovernable rage by the refusal both of herself and her guardian spirits to allow it. Finally, however, he appeared to grow calmer, and made a proposition to Mrs. Conant that if she would undertake a journey to New York City for him upon some business in which he was deeply interested, he would see her safely there, protect her in returning, and would ever after be a constant and helpful attendant, granting any reasonable request which she might make of him. She consulted with some of her friends, and, as they counseled the acceptance of the offer, she started for New York, in company with Mr. Berry, in the month of February, 1860. On arriving there, she repaired to a hotel, the Brandreth House, and, upon establishing herself therein, asked her invisible traveling companion what she was to do next. "Bring me writing materials, and I will show you what I want," was his reply. She arranged the paper, and he proceeded to control her hand, writing a letter to a gentleman, an entire stranger to her, and whose name and address, which latter was somewhere on Broadway, she seemed immediately to forget as soon as the missive was dispatched, requesting him to meet a friend at a certain room in the house in question at a specified hour of the day. This letter was sent to its destination by the aid of one of the hotel boys, and in 2 hours after, the stranger arrived, thoroughly puzzled as to whom to expect, and not knowing even the sex of the party who was desirous of seeing him. The number of the room was no guide to him, for in look, Mrs. J. Eel. Conant. $3. Ing at the register he found it to be occupied by a lady, while, by the handwriting of the letter, he had been led to expect a gentleman. However, decided to sill upon said lady and see what was the meaning of the strange procedure. Reaching the room, he inquired what was the business on which he was summoned. Mrs. Conant was confused, and at loss for a reply, whereupon Captain Gibbs proceeded to entranny her, and to explain the circumstances which had led to his calling on him. The nature of the matter which seemed so important to Gibbs, his medium never knew, though the gentleman seemed much interested when she returned to consciousness, and expressed himself as fully satisfied, both of the identity of the captain, and concerning the business treated of by him. The promise of the spirit, as regards being her friend in future, was kept in a remarkable degree, and Mrs. Conant had no occasion to regret her unexplained journey. The day on which she embarked for her return to Boston was fine, and not a cloud was to be seen. Meeting the captain as he walked through the cabin of the Sound steamer as evening was closing in, she asked if he anticipated a pleasant passage, to which he replied that the night promised to be as pleasant as any he had met with in the course of a long experience. "Well, Captain," returned the medium, "there will be a storm before midnight, you'll be obliged to anchor before 10 o'clock. "They've been on this sound," said the captain, "for 23 years, and hey rarely been Mr. Ken about the weather. If I am now, it will be very remarkable." 84 A biography of, so they parted, she foretelling a conflict of the elements, and the professional sailor predicting a fair and prosperous voyage. Beginning to feel sick soon after, she sought her stateroom, and fell into a fitful slumber, from which she was finally aroused by a hurried tramping overhead. The blowing of the whistle, ringing of engine bells, shouts and commands, the rattling of chains, and other signs which usually accompany a nautical disturbance. Hastily arising, and keeping her feet by clinging to the door, for the boat was rolling heavily, she demanded of the stewardess what had happened. "Oh," answered that functionary, "it's a heavy storm of snow and wind, and it isn't safe to run any longer on account of the other boats, so we're coming to anchor." "What time is it?" asked Mrs. Conant.
10 minutes of 10, said the stewardess. The medium, now fully awake, remembered I prophecy she was impelled to make to the captain, and saw that it had proved correct. Jerfiers immediately assumed the ascendancy, and sitting down as best she could, with paper and pencil, she asked Captain Gibbs what was to be the result. He at once wrote, "Don't trouble yourself, I will take care of this matter, and bring you home in safety." When the daylight came, 3 steamers were found anchored near them, but so thick had been the snow in the atmosphere that neither of the pilots had been able to see the other boats, and the escape from a collision was almost miraculous. The captain sought for his remarkably weather-wise passenger, Anders J. H. Conant. 85, sired to know by what means she had been enabled to foretell the approaching tempest. "That is a secret," was her playful response. "He would give something for that, sir," rejoined the son of Neptune. "Why, then, I am a spirit medium. Captain Gibbs, an old sailor, now dead, told me of the danger, on coming on board, and also promised to protect me."
"Indeed," said the captain. "You would be a fine passenger to have on board ship during a long voyage, better than a barometer. This has been the worst storm I have seen on the Sound. The steamboat company ought to carry you gratis. T will give you a free pass whenever you desire to visit New York." On another occasion, in the month of May, 1860, on going on board a steamer in New London bound for New York City, in company with Mr. Berry, Mrs. Conant entered the cabin, and looking around, perceived several buckets, empty at the time, and asked why they were kept there. Mr. Berry informed her that they were intended as aids in extinguishing fire, should the boat be subject to such an accident.
"Why are they not filled, then?"
"Because the officers probably think there is no fear of fire, and so they are not attended to."
"Well," retorted the medium, "they had better be filled tonight."
Mr. Berry became so impressed with the sense of coming danger, portrayed in her words, that he sent to the captain of the boat with a warning. That officer was not one of those who resent advice. 86 A biography of, even when given in all kindness, and he had the necessary precautions against fire observed, not only in the cabin but throughout his vessel. About midnight fire was discovered near the engine room, which would, in all probability, have proved fatal to the boat, if not to all on board, had not everything been in preparation to subdue it. As it was, the threat and conflagration was instantly stayed. The captain met Mr. Berry on deck just before reaching New York, and was anxious to know how the fire had been foreseen, and when informed that it had been spoken of by a lady passenger who was a spirit medium, he desired to be presented to her, and expressed his wish to know more about spiritualism, if the invisibles could do as well as that. This again was the work of the guardian, Captain Gibbs, who, foreseeing the emergency, had impressed her to utter the words which had caused the successful preparations to be made. Eel. Those acquainted with the peculiar delicacy of magnetic claws, know the subtle effect which persons of a certain given temperament bring to bear upon others possessed of one negative to or susceptible of approach by them. Shortly after her acquaintance with Mr. Gibbs, a lady whom she frequently met, began to exercise a power upon her which seemed to sap the fountains of her vitality, bringing on that fearful sensation of death in life which so many media have experienced, to their cost. Wherever Mrs. Conant appeared, at circles, parties, or elsewhere, this magnetic vampire seemed attracted, and came. E. Mrs. J. H. Conant. A. T. Also, until it appeared as if her physical decease would ensue. In this emergency, Mrs. C. was fain to call upon her constant though unseen friend, Captain Gibbs. "Help me," she earnestly asked. "Yes," was his answer, apostrophe leave her to me. "But what will you do?" she demanded, remembering his former villainy of manifestation toward herself. "Kill her, if necessary," was his rejoinder. He shortly afterward came and wrote, "You will be no longer troubled." As he predicted, the lady soon after ceased to come where Mrs. Conant was, and never afterward annoyed the medium he her disturbing presence. The friendly understanding between Gibbs, or Jeffreys, and Mrs. Conant has remained unbroken to the present day. He has assisted her in many ways, not the least remarkable in the eunuchary point of view, when she needed such help, by impressing persons to pay arrears or advance her the amount required. He has also given her strength in hours of psychicness and prostration. In the spring of 1856, herself and husband removed their place of abode from Mrs. Pope's, and went to live at the house of Mr. Berry, in North Cambridge. Dr. Fisher recommended a change for her, but she murmured, saying that she did not know where to go, that Mr. Berry had offered to board herself and husband, but she was not yet ready to leave her present home. She finally demanded of her spirit advisor a test which should prove conclusively to her that it was really himself, and not another intelligence, who was thus counseling her. In reply he directed her, 88 a biography of, to visit Mrs. Hayden, a medium in Hayward Place, Boston, and see what she had to say. She obeyed, and as soon as she entered the room loud raps began all around her. Mrs. Hayden said, "You have brought some powerful spirit with you." The parties then took their seats at the table, and the raps continued. Mass. Hayden, without the slightest no-edge concerning the purpose of her visitor, took up a pencil, and at once the name, John Dix Fisher, was mechanically traced on the paper, after which he, for it was the doctor, wrote out the same message he had previously transcribed through Mrs. Conant's hand at her own residence. His medium was then satisfied of his identity, and said, quietly, "All right, I will go." Her removal into the suburbs rendered it necessary that she should have some central location in Boston, in which, during the day, to answer the demands of her rapidly increasing mediumisty business, and such a desideratum did not immediately present itself. In fact, she searched for some time, and was beginning to be discouraged, although Dr. Fisher had previously told her that she should have an office on Washington Street. Finally, despairing of success, she visited a lady who hired rooms in a building the old Andrews estate on Washington Street, corner of Central Court, an edifice now extinct, it having given place to the March of Improvement Smile, and was informed by her that there was not a vacant room in the house suitable for her purpose, but that the landlord, Mr. Drury, had a fine little office just around the corner, up one flight, which he seldom made use of, and perhaps he could be prevailed upon. Mrs. J. H. Conant. 89, to give it up. Calling on him the next day, he said there was no fitting place in the building for the purpose she desired, and upon her reminding him of the office, was of the opinion that she would not like it when she had visited it. On being ushered into the apartment, the medium declared that she would make it do, if he would consent to relinquish it. After taking a day to consider the subject, the landlord rendered his consent, the room was refitted and furnished, and she commenced her sittings therein, remaining as a tenant for something more than a year, many of the most remarkable phenomenal manifestations of spirit power occurring there in her presence. The landlord informed her that when warm weather set in she would find the little room uncomfortable. "T don't see how you will get along with it," was his cheering assurance. "I shall be obliged to engage the spirits to keep it cool," replied Mrs. C. She accordingly requested aid from Dr. Fisher in this regard, and he promised her that she should have no trouble concerning the heat. The engagement was faithfully kept, as the landlord himself fully acknowledged when entering the office on a close and sultry, underscore day in July. He was forced to exclaim with surprise, "How cool you have it here, this is the most comfortable place I've visited today. What does it mean? Let us sit down at the table, and see," answered Mrs. Conant. She then asked Dr. Fisher if he had anything to $0 a biography of do with the atmosphere of the room, upon which he wrote in the affirmative, and followed the declaration with quite a lengthy message, giving the modus operandi by which, through the introduction of certain electric forces, and the ejection of certain magnetic ones, the temperature of the room was kept at its agreeably low degree, notwithstanding the heat outside.